Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to the show. This is the second part of our season review. And I guess this really isn't a review anymore because we're going to be talking about what the Hornets should be doing this offseason, this coming summer. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, ownership situation, the CBA, what all that means, then go on to what is always the most fun speculative part of any podcast or column or sports blog, which is our free agents, what other free agents might be out there, what kind of holes we're going to look to fill. So, of course, first we're going to talk about the really dry stuff. So, Michael, I know the CBA is the thing you love more than anything else in the entire world.
Oh, yeah. I do. And don't worry, we're going to get to the part where Dell Demps works out a MacGyver trade where he trades Emeka Okafor, Joe Alexander's expiring contract, and two sticks of gum for Dwight Howard.
Oh, so, come on. Don't be unrealistic. At least throw Willie Green in there.
Yeah, we might be able to. but no, I mean, you know, I know it is dry and it is boring, but there has never been, you know, I remember a lot of people asking probably 18 different times this year, is this the biggest game in Hornets history? You know, we heard that with games that had to do with playoff seeding. And then once they got into the playoffs, we had that with game two. And then game three was the biggest game in Hornets history. Then game five. And really the biggest landmark event in Hornets history, I really believe when we look back 5-10 years from now, will be this CBA. Because this is the domino that's going to affect everything else. I mean, based on how this collective bargaining agreement goes, that's going to dictate, A, the price that the NBA is going to set for the franchise, B, whether local investors who really consider the NBA a business want to invest in the Hornets, and C, whether or not the Hornets will be able to have the type of flexibility and the type of power to both add players around Chris Paul and keep Chris Paul himself in the fold. So people want to make their crazy trades and talk about, you know, all this fun stuff. There is going to be nothing more important to the future of the New Orleans Hornets than the CBA.
Yeah. No, I can't. I mean, it's almost impossible to talk about what free agents are going to come or even be available until you know what happens in the CBA. Because that sets everything. So there's always been this really arcane stuff going on where we have the salary cap. Can't go above the salary cap unless you have your own players. And there's the luxury tax. If you go above the luxury tax, you have to pay money and everybody else makes money. And there's all, I mean, there's a whole lot of complicated crap that goes on these caps. And all of that is set with this CBA. But the CBA isn't just that. I mean, that's what everybody focuses on is, oh, this is what governs the contracts between the players and the teams. But it also governs everything else about how revenue is earned and shared and used by the NBA. So it specifies TV revenues go to this, gate revenues go to this, advertising and team sales and all of the individual merchandise sold by the NBA stores, they go to this. All of that is governed in the CBA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a huge impact to the health of all the small market teams, because I can't remember the number off the top of my head. Was it like 12 teams made money this year, the NBA claims?
Oh. Okay.
Of course, that's, you know, what the NBA is saying, and they're going into a CBA bargaining. But I think they're saying 12 teams made money. And all the rest, and mostly small markets, lost money this year.
Yeah, so, and I mean, that's just, it, to me, you know, there's this old belief in the NBA that, you know, these owners, if they made money, it was just gravy. That owning an NBA team was more about the prestige of it. And, you know, that's just ridiculous. This is a business, and, you know, these people want to make money, and I think that's why they're willing to have a lockout that lasts perhaps an entire year, because they're just not going to make do with the old system. You know, a lot of things are going to have to change. And really, if this new collective bargaining agreement doesn't put a lot of things in the favor of small market teams, then honestly, there's going to be no reason for a local investor to buy the Hornets. You know, maybe some multi-billionaire who will have this as his 50th company will buy the Hornets and bring them out west. But unless the CBA solves some huge problems, you know, I can't really see a local investor wanting to buy the Hornets. So it's just absolutely huge.
So, I mean, and here's two things. I mean, one is there's absolutely this idea of more revenue sharing. And, you know, the NFL does a really good job of revenue sharing across all the teams. So all of his teams have parity. But in the NBA, I mean, even the teams that are losing lots of money, there are a couple that are hemorrhaging cash like crazy. But, you know, the Hornets are always considered, oh, they're one of the worst teams in the league. They lost $5 million last year. And I think their worst year, their entire existence, they lost $12 million. And they've made money more years than they've lost money.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. The way the current CBA functions, and this is just the overarching point that has to be made, is the owners don't just make gobs of money and then we have these contracts out there and there's no relation between the two. The actual salaries are set based on the amount of money the NBA makes.
Right.
So they say 57% of all basketball-related income, and there's a lot of ways you have to go through to figure out what's basketball-related income, but 57% of all the income goes to players directly. And so there's all these contracts out there that, yeah, I make $20 million this year. But what the reality is if the total salary of all the players actually comes out to be 60%, all these players are putting money into an escrow account that they don't actually get the money until they figure out what the totals were. And then they keep the money if the players, you know, if they need to make up it, or they hand it out to the players at the end of the season to make sure that they get the 57%. So there is, and I've said this before, the revenue sharing is important, but actually, if they just, I've just messed with some numbers really quick. If they manage to drop that number to just 50%, no team in the NBA would have lost money this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that's absolutely unreasonable, and I don't think that's going to be, you know, the problem. When it's all said and done, I think I think that players will buy into that, especially once they see some of the numbers and, you know, once they find a way to, I don't know how they're going to do it. Reward the players who are actually playing well. I just think the problem is going to come when the owners are going to want to restrict movement of certain players, and this is where CP3 comes into everything. And you know, I just think that Cleveland got burned so bad, Toronto got burned so bad, Denver was held hostage for almost an entire season, and I just I really think that's going to be the sticking point. And some people are throwing around the idea of a franchise tag and just different ways of making it much more financially feasible for smaller market players to keep teams. And I guess I'm just wondering, or smaller market teams to keep players, I guess I'm just wondering from you, do you think that whatever happens in the remainder of the playoffs could have any bearing on the CBA? Like, if the Heat go ahead and win the entire thing, is the new CBA more likely to have a franchise tag, less likely? I mean, do you think that matters at all?
I don't think that matters at all. And honestly, this is what you had to remember, too, about these negotiations. Franchise tags will impact the very best players in the NBA. But the people who vote to approve the CBA are, you know, all 450 players who you know, currently are part of the NBA Players Association, or some odd, 450 or so.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to impact 30 people, the 30 biggest stars, and maybe there's another 30 or 40 people who are delusional enough to think that they are part of the top 30 and they're not. But the other 400 will not give a crap about that franchise tag. And if that's not going to be the sticking point. So I think it's almost a certainty, if that's one of the things that the owners come back and say, which, like you said, they were burned. Some teams were burned pretty badly.
Right.
Something like that's going to be in this next CBA. And I don't think that's going to be a sticking point at all.
Now, how do you feel about a franchise tag objectively? Try not to be a fan of the Hornets or Chris Paul and wanting to keep him, but how do you feel about just that idea in general of a player essentially having earned their freedom on the free market and this device essentially just keeping a player where they don't necessarily want to be?
I hate it as a idea. Honestly, but I think that there are plenty of people in the world who are willing to accept reasonable compensation for working in a place that may not be their primary choice. And the entire premise behind the franchise tag is you are being paid the same amount of money as the very top players at your position. So, the idea of being locked into playing one place kind of sucks, but I think it's a perfectly valid or reasonable thing that you can apply.
I don't like it at all as an idea. You know, I think fans essentially hate it when it's the other way around, because to me the other way around is a player option in some ways when a guy obviously doesn't deserve that money anymore.
Right.
But the player picks up that option knowing that they're not going to play, but they're just going to collect a check. I mean, in a way, they're almost franchising the team.
Mm-hmm.
Me, the team agreed to that in the contract. You know, when Chris Paul signed this recent contract, he didn't agree to anything that said that the Hornets might be able to franchise him. I mean, I don't know if I like that whole idea, just in practice, just with how America works in general. But I've come up with a way of possibly, you know, making all sides happy. So tell me who says no to this. Essentially, a team is allowed to franchise tag a player. Right, under my, this is my construct, they're allowed to franchise tag a player for 2 years maximum, but what they have to do in each of those seasons is exceed the luxury tax line. And I know that sounds kind of arbitrary, but my logic is that a lot of people are afraid that these owners are going to use this franchise tag to, like, let's say the Clippers, keep somebody like Blake Griffin and then just make a ton of money off of Blake Griffin and never surround him with the pieces that he needs in order to succeed. But under my plan, yeah, you could use a franchise tag, but you have to spend essentially a lot of money, be over the luxury tax line, and then therefore at least be building some kind of competitive team. Also, that luxury tax money will go to paying the other owners. So essentially, everybody profits from you being able to essentially take away a person's freedom.
I don't know if that actually fixes the freedom problem. I mean, I like the idea, and I like that idea as much as the other one that you proposed back when we talked to Henry Abbott, which is the one unlimited slot.
Right.
I think both of those are perfectly reasonable ideas. I mean, there's actually a lot of different issues there. I mean, one of the ones that you mentioned also is players getting these long contracts and just, you know, not living up to them whatsoever.
Mm.
I mean, and that's like an entirely different one that has to be addressed by the CBA. And I mean, the way they've just been addressing it every you know, renegotiated CBA is just chopping a year off the maximum you can extend people.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's really that helpful, because then we'll be down to what, 4 years and 5 years? And it used to be 6 and 7, now it's 5 and 6, then it become 4 and 5. If somebody's on your team, I mean, the problems are the people who are giving their own players 5-year contracts, and they stop after, they stop immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be some other way to do it where you can, I mean, I almost prefer the NFL version of just give them a big-ass frickin' signing bonus and cut their ass if they're not there next year.
Yeah, but the players won't agree to that.
No, they won't. And there's, you know, like I said, 400 of them, and that'll impact everybody.
Yeah, so. No, I mean, to me, in the NBA, I highly doubt that in the NBA, if there was a franchise tag, that more than 10 teams would use it. I mean, would the Bobcats franchise Kwame Brown this year and pay him $17 million? No, of course not. I mean, the franchise tag would be used so rarely. It'll be interesting. But, all right, that's enough CBA talk. If people are still awake, let's get into the fun stuff. Before we look into other players on other teams, kind of wanted to talk about players on our team. I mean, for those who don't know, who aren't nerds like us and just know every contractual status of every player on the team, essentially Chris Paul, Emeka Okafor, Trevor Ariza, Jarrett Jack, and Quincy Pondexter are locked in. Those five guys, and really those five guys alone, are the only ones who, as of right now, are guaranteed Hornets as far as both them and the team having an obligation. So those five, but let's look at some of the other cases, I guess, starting from the bottom and moving on up. We talked about them in our last podcast. Aaron Gray actually has a $1.125 million player option, meaning that if he so chooses, he could invoke that option and be on this roster next year for $1.125 million. Or he could choose not to invoke that option and just be a complete unrestricted free agent. I guess, Ryan, I'll ask you, what do you think he does? And if you were the Hornets, what would your approach be with Aaron Gray moving forward?
I mean, I'd hope that he does. I hope he invokes it. I mean, he's now a 4-year veteran, which means his minimum possible salary is $800,000. So you're talking, like, I think it's 830 or something like that. So you're talking, he's getting paid $300,000 more than the minimum for a player who's been in the league as long as he has. I mean, he has earned more than that just from this one series, and judging by past contracts, unremarkable backup centers have gotten in the past, he's probably going to be offered a hell of a lot more than that. So basically, the Hornets should just be hoping he exercises the option, stays on, and becomes that fourth or fifth big man we were hoping all along. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think his agent would call him an idiot if he tried to do that, and he's going to opt out and see what he can get on the open market. And I mean, honestly, if you were the GM of the Hornets and Aaron Gray said, I'm opting out, and then he went out and played the field and saw what he got, and he got nothing good, nothing offered to him, and he came back and said, hey, can I have that $1.124 million? I'd say sure.
I think we've seen, in a market where we saw Johan Petro get 3 years, $10 million last year.
Right, exactly.
Aaron Gray put up a – So, all right, I'll put you – you're the GM. I'll put you in the position. Aaron Gray's agent comes back and says, hey, we got a three-year, $9 million offer from another club. Aaron loves it here, though. If you can guarantee that he'll get minutes as a fourth big and match that number, we will we'll re-sign here. What do you say?
No. I don't think it's – I mean – he's purely situational, and I love what he does, but Aaron Gray is 25 years old. He's not going to change his dietary habits. He's not going to change his workout habits. He is what he is. I don't think he's worth $3 million a year.
All right. Well, speaking of $3 million a year, let's move on to another big who the Hornets have an option of extending a qualifying offer. For those who don't know what a qualifying offer is, basically the Hornets – tender an offer that's set by the rookie pay scale. If they tender this offer, then that player essentially becomes a restricted free agent, which the Hornets can match anything. But if nobody makes them an offer, essentially the Hornets sign this player for that price. So Jason Smith has a qualifying offer of $3.135 million. Do you extend the offer? Are you willing to pay him that this year? And if not, and he becomes free, what would you be willing to do with Jason Smith? Would you have any interest in bringing him back?
No. Well, I mean, hey, let me change it. I could see him coming back as a fifth big man again, but we're talking minimum. I don't think he's worth more than the minimum. And I mean, there's always this idea that you overrate your own players. And I mean, I can remember times where I really liked what Jason Smith was doing for us out there, but he is not any better than a minimum salary backup big man.
Okay.
So I wouldn't make the qualifying offer. I would let him become a free agent. And, you know, I might call him up and say, look, I'll give you a two-year, you know, which is the maximum you can give at a minimum salary. I'll give you a two-year minimum guarantee for 2 years, you know, $1.7 million over the next 2 years if you come back. But that's the most I would do.
All right. Similarly, our starting.
Are you going to give your opinions on Mr. Smith or Mr. Gray, or are you just going to here?
I did on Gray on the last podcast. I mean, I think somebody's going to overpay him. I think that's what NBA teams tend to do with seven footers. Timothy Mozgov was given, and he never played in the NBA. Aaron Gray showed he could have a good series against a team that might be the three-time defending champion. Somebody's going to overpay him, so no.
So Jason Smith, though.
Jason Smith definitely would not extend the offer, and if he was still around on the scrap heap after I made the rest of my moves, I would bring him back for a minimum contract. So,
all right.
Moving forward, another similar qualifying offer, Marco Bellinelli, about $3.4 million for next year. Same thing. Do you extend the qualifying offer? And if not, would you bring him back at any price?
So this entirely is based on what I intend to do with Willie Green. So I'd have to make that decision with Will. I mean, because Willie is a veteran player. Again, we said last show, he's just not that talented. But
then, okay, let's lump them together. So Willie Green made about $4 million this past year. He's going to be a complete unrestricted free agent. So I guess, yeah, that's fair enough. Lump those two guys together as a shooting guard and take me through the process of your thinking with those two.
So, I mean, I would just decide which one I want to keep. I mean, I think that you could probably bring Willie back for less than the qualifying offer that you would make to Marco Bellinelli.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I mean, you could probably get him for a couple million a year for like 3 years. So, you know, like a $3 or $6 million deal or something like that.
Right.
But I actually think Marco Bellinelli has more talent and could turn out to be a better player. And he would have more trade value if you were going for, like, you know, trade assets. So I think my preference would probably be sign Marco to the qualifying offer and let Willie walk.
See, here's my thinking. My thinking is that you already have your backup shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Jack is your backup shooting guard.
Okay.
So you're talking about bringing in one of these guys. To me, if you bring in Marco, he's either your starting shooting guard or nothing. Because, like I said, I mean, he's not better than Jarrett Jack.
Do you think he has that kind of ego where he wouldn't accept a lesser role?
But when I'm talking about lesser, I think that at the end of the day, the Hornets are going to get a legitimate starting shooting guard. That guy's going to play 30 to 34 minutes. Jarrett Jack's going to play however many, 8 to 10 at backup shooting guard. So now you're looking at a guy who's going to get 4 to 6 minutes at shooting guard and maybe a couple of minutes at small forward and a small lineup. I think you're talking about either Willie Green or Marco Bellinelli taking a role of a 10 to 12 minute role and possibly being completely cut out of the rotation in the playoffs. No way am I paying anywhere near $4 million for that. So to me, which guy is more likely to contribute to my team at 10 to 12 minutes a game and as a leader of men? And, you know, I think we know that answer. So to me, I completely let Marco go. I understand that he has potential, but he's just so limited in so many other areas. We saw what our test did to him. To me, I completely let Marco go. I say thank you and best of luck. And I let Willie go ahead and play the market because I'm sure he's going to want to. But at the end of the day, yeah, he comes back to me for 2 years, $5 million, 3 years, $6 million, something in that area. And he's my bench guy. He's my assistant coach of sorts slash player. And, you know, just a guy who's probably a 10th or 11th man who I could go to in certain spots when guys get hurt. So to me, I'm looking to fill that third shooting guard role, not first or second, and Willie fits best for me.
I have two things to add to that. One, you sound pretty certain they're going to be bringing in a starting shooting guard. I'm not certain that there's going to be a starting quality shooting guard that they're going to be able to afford and bring in that easily. So Marco is pretty good insurance. I mean, he's the best of the options. But two, I think, regardless of what I think will happen with the Hornets is I think Willie Green is a Demps and Williams kind of guy.
Right.
And I think that their decision will be that they would bring back Willie Green over Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah, I agree. And my only fear, look, first of all, these guys, one thing I want to say is these guys want to win games.
Mm-hmm.
Like I agree with what you said, but what I don't want people to hear that as is these guys just like certain people. So they play those guys,
right.
You know, or pay those guys.
The whole favorites thing.
Right. No. Willie Green is the guy in your office who, you know, is not great at anything, but everybody loves him and you know he's going to be there every day. And like there's something to be said about that, especially when the other guy in your office doesn't really show up most of the time, doesn't work hard and isn't that much better. You know, like Willie Green would not be getting playing time if Marco Bellinelli was that much better. So I guess I just don't want people thinking that they just like these guys and it's buddy-buddy, so, you know, they're going to kick the white guy to the curb because they get along better with somebody else, as has been commented on in the past by certain people.
Right.
But, you know, so that's the thing with me, but really it's just a role thing. I think, yeah, maybe the Hornets don't go into the start of the 2011-2012 season with a premier shooting guard, but you don't think that Dell Demps is going to be working the phones every single day until he gets one? And you know, I don't think Marco Bellinelli has any value at all in the trade market, maybe as an expiring contract, but I don't think he's a tipping point in any way. So, you know, at the end of the day, by the time the Hornets are in the 2012 playoffs, neither Bellinelli or Willie Green will be playing a big role. So who do I want as my 10th or 11th man, and who can I get at a cheaper price? Probably Willie Green, and that's why I go that route.
Right. I will say this about our good buddy Marco. If he played even at his regular season level of production in this Lakers playoffs, he'd be getting paid.
Think so?
I think so. If he had managed to shoot 41% from three and score 11 points a game against the Lakers, I think somebody would have watched that and paid him some
money. Yeah. I mean, if Matt Carroll could get a contract in this league.
Right.
Oh, yeah, he would have been another Matt Carroll.
All right, so before we move to our big target, let's talk about the very last option that we have right up there.
Which is
David Anderson.
2.7 mil.
And if this is a team option, so the Hornets get to decide whether they want to pay him 2.7 million and bring him back next year. So, quick, one-word answer. Are the Hornets going to do that?
Unless he has nude photos, no.
One word!
Nude photos. Nude. No chance. No.
Yeah. We're not... I can't see... I mean, Jason Smith was getting minutes over him in the regular season and in the playoffs. I mean, they'll be bringing back Jason Smith before they bring back David Anderson, and we've already said we don't think Jason Smith's worth anything.
Right. So,
David Anderson is not making $2.7 million next year from the Hornets.
I think we could safely say that Marcus Banks won't be asked back. DJ Banga, again, it'll probably be a thing where if they're filling out their 14th or 15th spot, maybe they'll look at him. But as I said in the last podcast, I really think Patrick Ewing Jr. is on this team next year, and he's playing some minutes. So that'll be somebody to watch out for. But the big... the big question going into the off season, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, because I actually think one of the players holds all of the cards in this scenario and how the Hornets play it out. But we have two free agents or possible free agents at the power forward position: David West and Carl Landry. David West has a $7.525 million player option, meaning that he could, you know, essentially just like Aaron Gray, he could say, yes, I want that to be my salary for the year. There's nothing the Hornets could do about that. They have to pay him, and he's on contract for 1 year at 7.525. Carl Landry, on the other hand, purely unrestricted free agent, made $3 million this past year. So he's going to be looking to get paid, possibly starter money. So, how do you see this situation playing out? How would you hope it plays out? What would you do if you were a GM? Go ahead, throw whatever you want at me.
So I have a really hard time here, and it goes back to what I said in the last podcast. I mean, David West and Carl Landry. Carl Landry is a valuable bench player at times, but he's David West light, and David West is not your primary second banana. So, I mean, if he opts out and we have to sign him to a $10, $11 million a year deal to bring him back, I think we've just crippled ourselves. I don't think you can, I mean, you're not trading Okafor for that next big banana. You're not trading a combination of Ariza and Jack for that next big player. I don't know. I mean, again, I think Dell's in a really hard spot here with that. I mean, I personally think that because of the injury, David West may just opt into his contract for next year. Because I have a really hard time seeing any team willing, you know, with him out with an ACL tear until at least January, offering him a big money contract. So he might just do that and then gamble that the next year he can get one after playing for a few months on it. And that's probably, you know, the most conservative approach. But, I mean, honestly, I think Carl Landry, I think you should, the Hornets, this is what my take on it. If the Hornets can look around at the landscape
after they find out what David West is doing, and they can find a way or to try to snag that second guy to put next to Chris Paul, then they should probably try to bring back Carl Landry as the substitute, as a sub for, like, you know, $4 or $5 million if they can, and let David West go or use him as a trade chip or whatever they have to do. But if they can't see any way to get that secondary guy, well, then bring back David West and hope you get lucky on somebody trying to cut salary a little later in the year.
Yeah, I think there's another option for David West, and I don't know how Hornets fans would react to this, but I think that there is at least a 20% chance that David West signs an extension before we go into a lockout. I really do. I think that there's a chance that, you know, the two sides sit down and revisit some of the conversations. I know David West has to swallow his pride and know he's not going to get the same money he did before the injury. But I think it might be in both parties' favor in order to lock this up at a decent price for the next couple of years.
All right. Well, then that leads me to my question for you. I have a number in my head. A number that would not cripple us, but would possibly be acceptable to him. Who knows? What would you offer as Dell Demps? What is your not even what you would offer, because that brings another. What is your maximum that you would pay David West for the next for a 3-year extension?
Right. So we got to factor in, because in order to get that extension, he has to invoke the 1 year 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
So we're including that. So 3 years on top of that.
Yeah, 4 years total.
So we're talking about a total of 4 years. I would give him my max would be 4 years, $33 million. So you're looking at a 3-year, $26 million extension. I know in the last probably year and maybe even the last 2 years, I'm not getting my value. But I figure that money is going into keeping Chris Paul happy, also in order, you know, part of the New Orleans community and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's more than just on the court stuff. So that would be my max number, a total of 4 years, 33.
All right. So my number actually came out at $32 million, which is why I was laughing. I could actually conceivably see them doing something along the lines of even giving him an extension that's near the maximum of what he could get based, because again, this is the whole complicated thing. He has to opt into that player option at 7.5, which limits the amount he can make the next 3 years. So basically on 12% raises off of that 7.5.
Right.
So you could end up, though, giving him, like, I think it was a $38 million deal. And I could actually, I mean, I was thinking $8 million a year, but I could actually see offering him that maximum full extension that you can and only guaranteeing about 50% of the final year.
Yeah.
So if he's breaking down at that point in his career, you can say, here's $4 million, walk away.
Yeah, and I think that would be a fair deal, especially since you're looking at possibly paying him a full year salary this year for only a half a year
mm-hmm.
of play. So yeah, I think that'll be interesting. But I guess either way, here's a two-part question to you: if David West is on this team and he's going to be on this team for the foreseeable future, what does that mean for Carl Landry? And the second part is, do you think that it's possible that the Hornets are more eager to keep Landry because they don't see him as a sunk cost? And by that, you traded away Thornton. New Orleans fans are already angry as is. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to let go the guy who you gave up Thornton for. I mean, do you think any of that factors into Demps' decision?
Not so much. I mean, I know he feels the pain of Thornton because he goes to those little GM meetings he has with season tickets, and I've heard reports from multiple places that almost every one of those
he gets one or two unhappy people who ask him about Thornton.
Right.
So he's going to feel that pain, but Thornton was a free agent too. So, I mean, you didn't really trade anything different in the end. But here's the thing. Unless David West signs somewhere else, if David West signs with New Jersey for some stupid-ass number after opting out, then I think then the Hornets have to really think about whether they want to bring back Carl Landry. If West is coming back for any number, I think you get Carl Landry and tie him up. And the way I'm saying that is I think the decision point is now. If David West signs and goes somewhere else this summer, you move Chris Paul and start over.
Wow.
Because the Hornets aren't in an awful cap situation, but I don't see any way they can get the possible trade assets on their team to be able to bring in someone to replace even David West. I just don't see any way they could make this team a contender that would make Chris Paul happy enough to stick around the next year if David West walks. So I think if David West walks, I think you immediately try to find a way to get whatever you can for Chris Paul and Emeka Okafor.
Oh, you just got depressing. So you're saying it all hinges on David West.
That's how I would play it.
Huh.
And I don't necessarily think that's how Dell's going to think about it. I mean, and again, then we have to go back to the CBA thing. If there's a franchise tag, then crap on what I just said. You just franchise Chris Paul and say, well, fuck it, stay here. And we'll see whatever we can, next 2 years, we'll try to find what we can. But I think that if it stays put where Chris Paul has the opportunity of opting out 2012, 2013, and just walking, then you make that decision this offseason. And maybe pull off something similar to what they did with Carmelo. Just try to hold somebody hostage until they give you what you need.
Yeah, there aren't many young teams. I actually put together a list of possible trade partners and trades for Chris Paul just to see what you think. And honestly, there was only two teams that really, to me, had any package that we would be interested in from my viewpoint. Let me just ask, so David West leaves. Atlanta offers you Josh Smith and Al Horford and Jeff Teague for Chris Paul and Emeka Okafor.
You're not going to get much better than that.
Okay.
But here's the thing you got to think there. That core is going to make us a 40-win team probably. You're not going to get a draft pick. You're not going to improve.
Yeah.
You're going to be sitting in that no man's land, which is the worst possible place. So, I mean, I'm thinking when I say start over, I'm like, hey, Washington, give us John Wall.
Yeah, right.
Plus something else. I'm not saying even Washington would do that. They might, because they've got their own billionaire owner now.
Yeah, they're not close enough. Why would you take a point guard in his prime when you're not ready to win right now?
Nets took Darren Williams. Maybe we could trade him for Darren Williams.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, I mean, really, you go across
that's the so fucked up.
Go across the landscape and be real with yourself, and you'll see there's not many.
Well, teams. I mean, here's the thing, though. You say that, but wind back to January. Did you think that New York would give up what it did to get Carmelo?
No, but I mean, there's only enough dance partners.
Yeah, still.
What I'm saying is, if Carmelo wanted to go to Charlotte, Charlotte didn't have anything to give up. So what I'm saying is, there's only so many dance partners with assets that have enough assets to give away that when they're done giving up those assets, they're not barren.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if you go across the league, and like I said, the only other team I could really come up with are the Clippers, because they could give up enough young assets and hold on to Blake Griffin and make a legit offer. You could throw in an Eric Gordon and an Aminu and another top draft pick, and make a legitimate run at Chris Paul and have a Chris Paul Blake Griffin combo. So that's another team that's in the mix. But I think the way the Hornets play this out is they hope for the franchise tag. And again, we're getting way too ahead of ourselves, but I see what you're saying. If West is gone, you know, to keep Paul, but I really just don't see a way in which David West is not on this team next year, because I don't think he's getting a long-term contract.
Oh, I agree. I think the most likely outcome that we'll see in this offseason is that West returns. It's whether he returns at a reasonable offer or not. I mean, I think it's perfectly possible he might return at a higher number than what we were talking about earlier, and that we end up being a mediocre team for a while.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, and I'll sell that. But, I'm actually going to say that the most likely scenario for West is he takes the $7.5 million player option, and all the local newspapers basically write a story about how he's sacrificing to show that he could still play and blah, 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 and make him out to be a hero when really he's not going to have any other options. So those articles will be fun for me to read. But
let me fire off one more scenario to you.
Go ahead.
Okay. So West opts in. And he does that contract thing that we talked about. And we have already dumped Anderson, Bellinelli, and Smith, and Gray has opted out. We're looking at something like $50 million in salary. The salary cap this last year was, what, 58.5 or so?
No. Oh, yeah, the salary cap, yeah.
It was like 58 million.
The luxury tax was 70.3.
Right. And so is there any player out there? And let's say even Demps pulls off something really interesting and has a deal on the table where he could move Ariza or Jack for nothing and then have $14 million to play with. Is there one player that he could go out and obtain for that amount of money that would make this team a contender, even if they have to fill in with you know, nothing around the edges because they're already at the salary salary cap?
If Tim Duncan early termination, but honestly,
Manu Ginobili.
Honestly, no, and from the comments that I've read recently from Dell Demps, to me, I still don't think that the free agent market is where he's going to make his move. You know, he hired a lawyer to basically study the CBA and past CBAs and to try to essentially anticipate where this thing is going. And a lot of his comments are talking about taking advantage of situations that are presented. To me, that doesn't read as free agents, because those aren't situations presented. Those are free agents. To me, I think a lot of what Dell Demps is banking on is essentially other teams having to unload assets and him being a Sir Mix-a-Lot of sorts and just being on the side of the road, pulling up and ready to retrieve them. Well, yeah, because he has the line where he goes, they toss him and leave him, and I pull up quick. I'll school you on 90s rap.
No.
But I guess my bold prediction, if I had to make one, would be that the player, the most significant piece the Hornets add to their team next year will not be a player who's a free agent. It'll be somebody who's on a roster with money under their contract. So I think it's about creating that flexibility there. I think what the Hornets will do in free agency will be a more advanced version of what we saw this past year. I think they're going to let, you know, the teams with cap space overspend on certain guys, and then they're going to be there to pick up bargain basement guys at the end of it when everybody stops. I mean, a guy like E. Gian Leon, like, these are guys that eventually you have to gamble on that he's gonna reach his upside one day, that he's gonna be a poor man's Chauncey Billups that just didn't get it in his first couple stops, and now, you know, he's and that's a guy you could get. A guy like Reggie Evans, we talk about somebody who, you know, is an interior tough guy who could take charges, grab rebounds. Reggie Evans made $5.1 million last year. I doubt he makes a third of that this upcoming year. Like, there's going to be a lot of guys on the scrap heap like that. A guy like Troy Murphy, who did nothing this, you know, after getting traded to Boston. There's just going to be so many guys like that who in other years would have been overpaid. What about a guy like Caron Butler? What kind of contract is he going to get moving forward? I just think that the Hornets are going to get, you know, smaller rotation guys in free agency, and their bigger move will be a trade from another team. That's just my feeling from his comments.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, the Hornets do have the ability to make one moderate splash. But here's the biggest risk about making those moderate splashes. I mean, Hollinger says this all the time. The guys who most underperform are those people who sign those contracts from like 4 to 6 million. Because those are the guys who you're kind of hoping turn into like a usable star, but may not.
Right.
And so they end up signing that, and then they don't perform all to what you expected. And so, I mean, really, they're not that much better than a guy who's making $2 million or is on a rookie contract. So if those guys are like, if you get enough of them, which is what the Hornets had a few years ago with Posey and Peterson, I mean, those are the kiss of death to any small market franchise.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think Demps is on the, I mean, if he can't land somebody, like, and even if it's just like a trade, he's taking it into his, into the cap space that he's got available. I don't see him. I think you're right. I think he goes for like the $3 million guy, a couple of them, and hopes that, you know, they fill in just the way you want to, or, you know, maybe they weren't, you know, believed in, like, you know, the perfect, I mean, I don't think we're going to find this, but I mean, the perfect scenario would be something like happened with Darrell Wright in Golden State. I mean, he got a nice little $3 to $4 million deal. No one really expected that much from him, and he's playing way above what was expected.
And see, to me, there's tons of guys like that out there this year, and I know Hornets fans have their eyes set on the bigger ones, but honestly, if a guy is a really good player, there's going to be multiple teams with an eye on him, and there's going to be multiple teams that have more money to pay than the Hornets. I mean, there's teams that are going to be 30, 40 million under the cap. So, you know, I know people are always saying Aaron Aflalo, and I'm sure you love him as well. And, you know, the Hornets, I really think in order for the Hornets to get a contract out there that Denver doesn't match and somebody else doesn't top, they'd have to pay Aflalo $7, $8, $9 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, he's just not worth it. But, you know, I think there will be other guys. I think the Hornets will definitely make another run at Shannon Brown this year. I think, you know, Shannon Brown went back with to the Lakers thinking that he would have a bigger role, and he didn't this year. I think he'll opt out. I think the Hornets will make a run at somebody like that. I think that there'll be some big men. Like I said, Ejion Leon, you know, is a guy that hasn't done anything so far. But look at a lot of the guys who made contributions for the Hornets this year. Like, was anybody ecstatic when Jason Smith or Willie Green or Marco Bellinelli were brought in? You know, a guy like Craig Smith, like, he's a guy that every time, no matter what team he's on, Craig Smith plays against the Hornets, you recognize him. Like, he creates mismatches, and you know, Jonas Jerebko. There's just so many of these type of guys out there. Brandon Wright might not get his qualifying offer, that the Hornets, I have a feeling they'll go for one or two veterans similar to what, you know, the Bulls did with Keith Bogans this year. Guys like that, scrappy veteran guys for close to the minimum, that they know that they're not going to get a lot of potential, you know, out of, but they'll be solid. And then I think they take one or two strikeout or home run type of swings with a guy like Ejion Leon or, you know, somebody of that ilk. So it'll be an interesting offseason, but I guess I kind of want to know just one last time with Landry. I mean, we talked about all these scenarios with West. just really what do you see as the role if David West is re-signed and then the Hornets go and re-sign Landry? I mean, do you think there's room for a fourth big there, or are you just going to go with three undersized bigs in your front court for those 96 minutes?
I'm going to be completely cynical here. I think you bring back Landry, and as soon as David West is healthy and playing well, you move him. And I think you have to go, I mean, you have to go out and get somebody, and I know we've thrown his name around, Nazi Muhammad, some sort of big man who is big, who can actually play, you know, some sort of role next to David West or next to Emeka Okafor against really big players, who is not Aaron Gray, who's totally situational.
Yeah.
Sense? And, I mean, but I still think you got to bring, I mean, with West, he's not coming back till January. So you got to have Carl Landry there to keep the team rolling at least a little bit. You got to have one of the two big men able to get offense. And you're not going to be able to find a big man who's sitting on the free agent, you know, scrap heap who is going to be able to score for you. I mean, our other choices would be someone like, you know, I don't know, Hakeem Warwick, who is, you know, almost useless in Phoenix. Those are the kind of scorers you'll be able to get who are, like, you know, I mean, Landry can do a couple things pretty well. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if I guess it all depends on what your long-term plan with David West is, but I just don't know how much I'd be willing to pay Landry if at the end of the day he's going to be a 20-minute-a-game guy. When, like I said, I mean, you got Carl Landry, who definitely is a better player than a Craig Smith, but at 20 minutes per game, that difference is going to be so negligible that, you know, if there's two totally different costs with those two players.
So, well, do you know, do we own the bird rights to Landry?
The
bird rights would allow us to go over the salary cap.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. The Hornets own that. But usually you're only allowed to give a percentage raise, but no, they're on. So, yeah, the Hornets do have bird rights, and actually they could give him whatever he wants after he expires.
So I'm trying to think. I don't know. I mean, let's just say this was an option. Yeah. So we could either sign Landry and maybe Nazi Muhammad for combined all of our cap space. Or you could just get Tyson Chandler for the same amount.
I mean, to me, no matter what, you could throw almost any option up at me, and Tyson Chandler would be the answer for me.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's what my thing has been all along, is Tyson Chandler is my ultimate dream at this moment.
Right.
Just, I mean, strange in a lot of ways. But, yeah, I mean, if there was any way Dell Demps could manage to land us Tyson Chandler, I would be perfectly happy with letting Carl Landry walk away. And, I mean, just hoping, you know, Jason Smith can hit some mid-range jumpers for us here and there. And letting, you know, doing the Tyson Chandler or Emeka Okafor front line. Because that'll be tough enough defensively that if we can manufacture some points out of the back end, we'd be okay.
Yeah, but to me, this has nothing to do with Dell Demps, and it's similar to the Dwight Howard issue. The Hornets can't, I mean, they just simply won't have the money to get Tyson Chandler. It's nothing to do with what Demps can or can't do. The fact that he's going to be going against Mark Cuban, who will be hell-bent on getting Chandler, just makes it a non-option.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
I mean, to me, the bigger questions are, all right, here's another trade I'll throw at you. This is kind of...
If you say Rip Hamilton, my answer is no.
Oh, give me a break. Okay, this is a trade that I'm going to propose to you, and at first you're going to think... actually, I don't know who you'll think it's crazy for, but okay. Emeka Okafor and Trevor Ariza for Brandon Roy, Greg Odom, and Nicholas Batum.
I'd do that in a second.
Now think about it. Think about how much money you're paying Brandon Roy, who's pretty much done. Greg Odom, who's never shown that he could play a quarter of a season. I mean, you're talking about being afraid of basically handicapping your team with a David West salary. I'm talking about Brandon Roy, who's going to absolutely kill any future flexibility. Almost everybody says that the guy is essentially done.
I'd still do it in a second.
Okay.
I mean, and I know you quote Simmons a lot, that whole, Pacers swinging for the fences, go for Odin kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is. And it's the same thing that Miami did back when they won, when they traded for Shaq. It's the idea that you just put everything, if you have the opportunity to possibly win a championship and it's going to cost you down the line, do it anyways. And I actually believe in that because there aren't that many chances to win a championship. And if Odin and Roy both play fairly well, and you have David West coming back, and you have Batum there. I mean, that's a team that could win a championship with Paul. I mean, there's no question about it.
But Blazers fans have been saying that as well. Yeah, no, I agree. And for me, for the Blazers, it's a good trade as well because they could put Wallace at the three. They got LaMarcus Aldridge and Okafor, who at least they'll know that they have a center suiting up. Mm-hmm. Every single game, which they haven't been able to have. They have Wesley Matthews and a point guard, and then, they'll have Ariza being able to come off the bench. I mean, to me, that just stabilizes their team and says, okay, Aldridge is our number one guy. Wes Matthews is going to be the guy we paid money to, and we got Ariza and Okafor showing up every night as opposed to wondering who's going to be on our injury list. So I don't know. I don't think Portland would do it just because of their fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one brand. I think, unfortunately for Portland, that one Brandon Roy game where he won them a game against Dallas.
Right.
I think that's going to force management to bring him back.
Yeah.
I think that there's no way they trade him now because the fan base will go, but he showed that he could do it. Blah, whatever. So I actually think that one game was the worst thing that could have possibly happened to Portland. But I think that would be an interesting trade for both teams because, yeah, the Hornets swing for the fences and either they hit it big or strike out, and Portland just gets the solid guys on the court that they could depend on every night.
Right.
But, all right, so I guess we know it'll be a very interesting offseason. Do you expect anything at all from the draft? Debs, perhaps, to try to get another pick or maybe even use the trade exemption that they got from the Stojakovic trade on that night? Or do you expect it to be very quiet?
I actually expect him to be involved in some sort of deal, even as a facilitator, just getting in and picking up like the spare parts.
Right.
Because we have the $8 million and we have the Stojakovic thing. So he will be active trying to do something. I do not expect him to be going after any players in this draft. And I've heard this a few times, and I think you might have said it too, that this, is shaping up to be the worst draft in recent memory.
Oh, God, yeah.
What I've actually, studying like what Draft Express talks about, I've been trying to get up on it. They actually say that, well, if you're looking for pure stars, then absolutely this will be one of the worst drafts. I mean, you're not going to get a Derrick Rose or even a John Wall out of this draft. But you will get, they are pretty confident that the rotation players, like the guys who normally go between, 7 and 24, and like half those guys will turn out to be, in the top 6 people on a team. They feel that those players are still there. So I don't expect him to be trying to make any sort of splash to get into the lottery. Or even, maybe like pick up a second draft pick like in the second round that he might like at most. But I really don't expect him to try and trade into the draft.
Hmm. What would you say if the Charlotte Bobcats offered you Steven Jackson and your own first round pick back for the second round pick?
For just the second round pick?
Right.
So basically they're paying us to take Steven Jackson.
Yeah, they're giving us a first round pick to take Steven Jackson 2 years, $20 million off their hands before the new CBA comes in.
I'd take that.
Man, you just take anything, huh?
Well, I mean, that one's a little harder because Steven Jackson is probably going to decline a little bit these next 2 years.
Right.
But he is such a massive upgrade over anything we have with a shooting guard. And it also frees you up to be able to explore trades with Trevor Ariza. I think Steven Jackson's more of a small forward than a shooting guard. But you could probably get some sort of reasonable starter at shooting guard for Trevor Ariza. Or is it really all that awful to have Trevor Ariza be your guy off the bench as a swingman? No.
Yeah. No.
Would you take that?
To me, I'm just so hesitant to take on big contracts before this CBA comes in. To me, you take that trade and essentially you're locked into a $60 million payroll. With, again, a team that I don't think is good enough to win more than one playoff series. I would just be hesitant. I really think, I mean, Steven Jackson's making $9.2 million next year. I think if this new CBA comes in the way that I think it will, I think you'll be able to get three or four, like, very good rotation players for $9 million next year.
Okay.
Like I'm talking about, you know, a Shannon Brown as a combo guard, perhaps I know you don't, well, I'm not going to even say the name because you don't like him, but maybe a Luke Bamute, again, and then some home run chances like E.G. on Leon and your favorite Jeff Foster. Like, I think you could get those four guys for about the price of a Steven Jackson next year after all the teams come in and spend their money on the top guys on the free agent list. And then you're stuck, sitting around with guys like that. So
honestly, I think you could probably get all four of the guys for almost $9 million right now.
I mean, and you laugh at that, but to me at the end of the day, I guess I almost think that we're either talking superstar or everybody falls into the same category. Like, if Steven Jackson isn't going to win you a championship, then how different is he than Luke Bamute? Like, if at the end of the day you're going to be eliminated by some team.
We have to go out and get Bahamut because it's fun to listen to you struggle over how you say his name.
Luke
Bahamut, because, that's easy.
Or, like, to tell you, like, a guy that I saw that I really liked that I would take a chance on is Earl Clark. Like, I think that's a guy with some upside that could defend multiple positions. There's just so many of these guys that are going to be out there.
Okay, wait one sec. Who was the guy you didn't want to say?
I wound up saying him, Jeff Foster.
Jeff Foster?
Yeah. Okay. I know you hate him.
Hate's a little strong.
Yeah, but to me, like, the guy is the type of guy that I like as my 10th man. Grab me rebounds.
Yeah,
a couple of cheap fouls against the other team, flop here and there.
Yeah.
But I think there's just going to be so many guys like that that for $10 million you could get four guys that will be in your rotation throughout the year. That it would be a little hard for me to justify spending that on a guy like Steven Jackson, who at the end of the day isn't going to be, a major difference one way or the other. So, we'll see, but it'll be very interesting. I just, hope Hornets fans stick through and pay close attention to the CBA. And like I said, it's going to have a lot to do with where the Hornets are in the upcoming years and who's going to be on their roster. And quite honestly, if they're going to be able to compete, I mean, if you look at the teams right now who are, still alive and likely to make the finals, take out the Miami Heat because because their situation's a little different. But the Lakers have the number one payroll in the league at $91 million. The Mavs are right there at number two at $90 million. The Celtics are at number four with $83 million. The Magic actually had an $89 million payroll and were one of the top teams in the East. I mean, the bottom line is the way that this current CBA is set up, it would have been very hard for the Hornets to be contenders year in and year out, especially since, you know, they weren't blessed with multiple lottery picks like Oklahoma City was.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I mean, if you're interested in basketball and the Hornets moving forward, even more important than all the conversations about which trade we should make and free, like, this is the first domino that's going to set all the rest of them.
Let me ask you a question.
Ask it.
If the Hornets call up Oklahoma City and offer Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, who says no?
I think Oklahoma City does, only because they're so, such a big value to them is that whole chemistry, team built, you know, combo that, they were so hesitant for so long to make a move with one of their core guys just because they really believe of building internally. And so I think even Sam Presti or anybody at Oklahoma City would acknowledge that Chris Paul is the better point guard, especially, you know, come playoff time or whatever. But I think just because of the chemistry aspect, both teams would say no.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think especially considering the way Westbrook has been dominating the ball a lot more this year, it might even be more attractive to have a Paul there. But
if they were able to be objective, but I mean, this is another thing that a lot of people don't think about. Like, you know, you see these guys every day at work. You know, we're able to stand outside of it, but just like how, you know, it's a phenomenon that people have a hard time selling their cars because they, you know, and you say this with players, you know, you give your car more value than it actually has. And it's the same thing with these GMs and player personnel guys, and they give their own players more value just because they know them.
Right.
You know, they know Russell Westbrook's work ethic, and even though they know Chris Paul is a great player, you don't know what you're getting day in and day out. And people are just so afraid to mess with chemistry, especially, you know, that whole San Antonio family. So I don't think Oklahoma City would do it. Now, should they do it? Hell yeah. But I honestly don't think they would.
Okay.
Interesting, but
good talk.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it. And hopefully in the upcoming weeks, check back for the podcast. We're hoping to have some, you know, CBA experts on and some other people who know even more than we do about this whole situation, because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be important, and we know people are going to want the latest updates. So check back, and hopefully we'll have some people who really know what they're talking about help educate all of us on this situation that's going to dominate a lot of the summer, much like the negotiations have dominated the news and football as of late.
Yep, and we'll also have some draft coverage. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get you all kinds of information on those second round draft picks that the Hornets are bringing in for workouts. We always like to do those kind of breakdowns of what this kind of guy has done in college and what he might turn out to be in the NBA.
Yeah, just so when the Hornets sell their second round pick, we could all be frustrated.
Don't say that. I can't imagine Demps actually selling. Because he comes from the San Antonio line of thought, which is draft, draft, draft to make your team. So.
Right. No, I agree. I do think the Hornets are going to use that second round pick. What I would almost guarantee is that it will be somebody that they stash.
Right.
Similar to what the Spurs did with Tiago Splitter for all those years and something of that. I would be absolutely shocked if whoever the Hornets take in the second round is on the Hornets roster this year. But I definitely think they'll be a developmental prospect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Someone who can keep an ear up for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Dominating the NBDL like Joe Alexander.
Right. Okay, so thanks everybody listening to In the Know. Stay tuned to the site. We've got lots of stuff coming up. Thanks very much for listening.